This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent and diverse campus community radio from Simon Fraser University.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded August 26th, 2026. Well, Hillary said it was the Russians that sunk her in 2016. Trump claimed China done for him in 2020. Canada's intelligence agencies bolstered Trump, saying China tried to do for us, too, twice. But Canadian security establishment and CSIS concerns had less to do with a love of the democratic process, as Canadian foreign policy writer Eve Engler points out, than being deeply integrated with their U.S. counterparts in an intelligence-sharing alliance driving hostility towards China. This is not to say all allegations of poll-fixing are merely sore loserism, cynical foreigner bashing, or in the Canadian case, shamelessly currying favor. Transnational political meddling is real, and one need only look to recent elections in South America to see how it works and what it costs the people. Alan McLeod is senior staff writer for Mint Press News and author of the books Bad News from Venezuela, 20 Years of Fake News and Misreporting, and Propaganda in the Information Age, Still Manufacturing Consent. McLeod's recent piece at Mint Press, U.S. Meddling in Brazilian Elections, Preparing for Possible Military Intervention, reveals who's haunting South America's electoral machinery. Alan McLeod in the first half. And in case you'd forgotten about the genocide in Palestine, it's still going on. In Gaza, in the West Bank, and in Jerusalem, the so-called settlers, extremist Jewish supremacists, continue their robbing and beating and killing to such a degree even American ambassador and avowed Christian Zionist Mike Huckabee referred to them as terrorists. Hardly news, but what Huckabee and the rest of the West won't concede is the unity existing between the Israeli political establishment and those same settlers. Salam Hamdan is a Palestinian political activist and social feminist from Ramallah. She's in Canada, watching things go from worst to worst at home. Salam Hamdan and keeping an eye fixed on Palestine in the second half. But first, Alan McLeod and the small step from political meddling to military intervention. Welcome back to the program, Alan.
It's great to be with you.
Well, it's great to speak with you again. It's been a couple of years. Alan, before we get to your article, Latin media is agog right now with the Fernando Cerameda story. For our North American audience who haven't heard much of this, I'm sure, who is Cerameda and how does he fit into the puzzle of election meddling in South America?
Yeah, this is an absolutely wild story. I guess in a nutshell, Fernando Cerameda he's an Argentinian political consultant and the mastermind behind so much of the right-wing resurgence over in Latin America right now. He was crucial to advising Rodrigo Paz's election victory in Bolivia. He's a big friend of Javier Milei. He's Milei's Svengali, if you will. He's the one who suggested to Milei bringing a chainsaw on stage, which was one of his big gimmicks when he was on the election campaign. He advised Nasri Asfura, the president of Honduras. So I always call him like a Latin American Steve Bannon almost. So yeah, he's a strategist, but incredibly on Tuesday, he was arrested for ordering the murder of his mistress, Nadia Belair, who in herself is a lawyer. He is married, but he seems to have been carrying on with Belair for quite some time. If you go online, you can find video, extraordinary video, showing delivery men, or at least people dressed as delivery men, opening fire on her near a hotel. She actually survived this and in hospital told police exactly who she thought was behind the attack. And then the police publicly released what they say are texts from Cerameda's phone showing him explicitly ordering the attack. So if they are to believe, this is almost an open and shut case here. But unlike Steve Bannon, it seems that Cerameda might actually face the music. He's been arrested. Bannon did, of course, spend minimal time in prison, but has not faced consequences for a lot more of his more serious crimes, like, for instance, his Jeffrey Epstein connections, or the fact that when police raided his home, they found a bathtub full of acid there. And that was just, memory holds. So yeah, this Sari Meadow case is really in at the forefront of people's minds in Latin America right now, because he is a very important person in this far-right resurgence, what that we've been seeing across the continent for a year or more now.
Well, and when you mentioned Bannon, you had the political, the behind the curtain guy for Trump for so long, but he does, this Sari Meadow character, have American connections as well, high up political connections with the Republicans. Of course, he's a big fan of Trump, and what's being the lines being drawn between him and election results and all these like Cambridge Analytica style monkeying around with polls and all kinds of other things are being traced back to the United States. Is there enough evidence for that yet? Is it plausible enough to see him as a cat's paw of American interests?
Well, listen, the Latin American far right are notorious for their proximity to the US far right. You know, the Bolsonaros make no secret of how closely they follow the Trumps, their personal friends, Milei, of course. It's debatable whether he'd still be in power if not for Trump propping up his economy. So absolutely, there are people in Latin America in power right now who are very comfortable with the fact that the United States sees the entire region as its backyard and are actively enabling this. So for all the talk of Russian and Chinese and Iranian meddling in Western elections, the reality is that the United States... these countries' meddling is like a toothpick in a forest compared to what the United States does around the world and in Latin America, especially.
I love the analogy, especially being from British Columbia, where we use forests to make toothpicks. But in your article, Alan, the U.S. meddling in Brazilian elections, preparing for possible military intervention. Now, it's not far-fetched to believe that this is going on now. The Americans have been involved. The United States has been involved in meddling in Brazilian politics for a long time. They actually enabled, the Americans did, the 1964 coup that led to the decades-long dictatorship there.
Yeah, that's correct. In 1964, the U.S. Sponsored a coup which overthrew João Goulart, who was a sort of liberal slash progressive reformist, and replaced him with, as you said, more than two decades of fascist military dictatorship, which destroyed the country, which had been making extraordinary progress and still has echoes throughout society to this day, even though Brazil has formally been, a democracy for over 30 years. The fear of the police, the fear of the military, the fear of the repressive state in Brazil is very real. And, you know, the Bolsonaro family, Jair Bolsonaro, grew up and advanced his career in the military during the dictatorship. And, you know, when he was sworn in as president, he did it, and he dedicated it to the military guard, who actually is known to have tortured Dilma Rousseff, the former president. So this sort of history is very much alive in Brazil right now, and so much of it is thanks in no small part due to CIA meddling in the country.
Well, it's a real blood sport politics is down there, and going to prison just seems to be a rite of passage. Lula, of course, was arrested. Dilma Rousseff, as you mentioned, Lula's protege, after he ended up in the can, she was chased and threatened with being imprisoned. I don't recall if she actually got chucked in to prison or not. Now Lula is back facing the offspring of the man that had him thrown in prison, Jair Bolsonaro's son, Flavio. Who's this guy?
Yeah, that's correct. As you said, he is the son of Jair Bolsonaro. He's very much his father's son. The elections are coming up in October, and he's polling as the second favorite candidate right now behind Lula da Silva, who has been on and off president for a very long time. Flavio is very close to Donald Trump. In fact, he has been flying back and forth to Washington, D.C., many, many times in order to pick the State Department's brain about which way to go on this thing. So, yeah, he promises very much to continue his father's legacy. I think, honestly, if you want to understand Brazilian politics, if you want to swap out the name Bolsonaro for Trump, it really does make a lot of sense. You know, Flavio and Eduardo and the other members of the Bolsonaro clan are very much following in the footsteps of Jair, just like Donald Trump, Ivanka, and the other Trump sons and daughters are doing the same with Dad Don. So we're seeing generation number two trying to take power in Brazil. But of course, that's only happening because the elder Bolsonaro, Jair, unlike Trump, faced consequences for his coup attempt on January the 8th, where he tried to convince the military and the people to rebel against the legitimate election of Lula and trying to ensconce him as a dictator. He was sentenced to 27 years in prison, whereas Donald Trump was got off with basically a slap on the wrist, didn't he?
Well, and Trump was gating off about that. He was really upset to see Jair thrown in prison, and I can understand why. He wouldn't like to see any precedents set for imprisoning presidents that might catch on north of the border. Is there, and his son Eduardo is a political figure, a Brazilian political figure in the United States, who has Donald Trump's ear and that of the Miami mafia, just coin a loosely coin a phrase. Is there what's the condition of Jair's imprisonment? Is he in one of these sort of like club fed style prisons and, you know, just waiting for his pardon when his son ascends power? Or is he in a prison for real?
Yeah, that I don't remember off the top of my head, but I remember at one point he might have been under basically like a house arrest kind of deal. So it's certainly not the sort of brutal Latin American prison that you might imagine. It's no like horrible solitary confinement for this guy. Yeah.
Well, and when you mention the dynastic elements of Brazilian politics and compare them to the United States, I mean, that was it used to be a joke that of the third world banana republics that you would see these family dynasties coming in with 99% of votes if they even bothered to hold them. And now the United States, there's rumors that Don Jr. might be a candidate if Donald Trump doesn't decide to run for an unprecedented, at least in the modern era, third term.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it is. We did used to laugh at countries when the son took over from the father. But of course, the United States has had dynasties themselves. Think of the Kennedys, the Bushes, people like that. You know, these political families that held power for decades, even the Clintons. You know, they were trying to groom Chelsea Clinton at one point for a career in politics before she, you know, quite wisely, in my opinion, decided that was very much not for her. And they decided she was not for politics as well. So, yeah, we can look at these countries and think, huh, doesn't that show they're completely anti-democratic? But a lot of the quote-unquote democracies have these political dynasties as well, these political families that control power. And of course, when we're talking about this, we're talking about political figures, but of course, business figures who hold so much power in Western societies as well, those don't change from generation to generation either.
Well, I can't imagine what Thanksgiving would be like in the Clinton household if Chelsea did run for president, and God forbid that she would win. Can you imagine sitting across the table from Hillary and there being two presidents at the table and Hillary fuming on the other side of the table? If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking tonight with Alan McLeod. Alan's a senior staff writer, or the senior staff writer at Mint Press News, and he's the author of the books Bad News from Venezuela, 20 Years of Fake News and Misreporting, and Propaganda in the Information Age, Still Manufacturing Consent. We're speaking in and around his recent piece up at Mint Press. That's mintpressnews.com. U.S. meddling in Brazilian elections, preparing for possible military intervention. What, Alan, signs do we have that there may be a military component to the upcoming elections in October, as you say, the 4th and 25th or 6th or something, if my memory serves?
Yeah, well, first of all, the U.S. is meddling heavily. What evidence do we have for that? First of all, one of the candidates, Lula da Silva, is openly talking about how the United States is meddling and warning the United States to respect the will of the people, don't get involved, don't intervene, don't try to hack the voting systems, everything like that. while the other candidate, Flavio Bolsonaro, is constantly flying back and forth to the United States, trying to get them to intervene even more. You know, one example of this is, I think in May, Bolsonaro flew over to the United States, and just a couple of days later, the State Department declared a couple of Brazilian gangs foreign terrorist organizations, reportedly at the behest of Flavio himself, who, as I said, flew to the United States for meetings with Rubio and co. Now, you might remember not so long ago that the United States designated Tren de Aragua, a Venezuelan gang, as a foreign terrorist organization. And then, lo and behold, very shortly after, the United States intervened militarily in Venezuela. So there are many people in Brazil, political analysts, who are saying the reason that these extremely obscure gangs running around the streets of Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo are being treated as foreign terrorist organizations akin to ISIS or Al-Qaeda is precisely because the United States is considering to militarily intervene in Brazil if the elections go the way that they don't want. And that, of course, would be another Lula victory. Another thing the United States is doing is the United States consulate in Sao Paulo is openly holding courses where they are coaching far-right influencers on how best to harmonize in their strategies in attacking the Lula government and talking about corruption and freedom of speech. And yes, just getting everyone on the same hymn sheet so they all attack him in a coordinated manner. The fact that this is going on openly is truly extraordinary. There's been cases of these right-wing influencers boasting about their time at the US consulate and talking about the sorts of things that they were discussing there. It's also been reported that the United States government is also paying for Brazilian journalists to come to DC for meetings with the State Department. And we can only wonder the sorts of things that they are being told in Langley, Virginia, over there. We've seen a media attack in the United States from the likes, not just the Trump supporting press, but also the likes of the New York Times attacking the Brazilian government and, you know, kind of low-key paving the way for some kind of increased hostilities with them. We've seen people like Elon Musk sparring with Lula and the government there because of the Brazilian government's insistence that X or Twitter, if you'd rather give it its real name, follow Brazilian laws. And of course, this whole election period, we have to say, is happening under huge American sanctions, which are deliberately designed to crash the Brazilian economy so that people will not vote for Lula and will vote for change, will vote in the next Bolsonaro in line. This is going on openly with Trump talking about how Brazil's involvement in BRICS and how it is actually a leader of that economic coalition is specifically a point of contest for him. He sees BRICS as a real threat to dollar hegemony and therefore US economic might around the world, and how he is trying to smash that organization through tariffs and other economic measures. So there is enormous involvement from the United States in this election. And right now, Lula is still well ahead in the polls. Some of the polls show 12%, 10% a lead over Bolsonaro right now. But if you know, Brazilian politics does change very rapidly, but if he holds on and manages to win in October, then the United States will go to Plan B and they will start considering at least the possibility of intervening militarily.
Politics in Brazil, yeah. It was in 2018 when Lula was leading before his arrest. He was also leading, I think, by double digits in the polls before. And then this something was cooked up against him, and he ended up in the can. Bolsonaro ended up in the presidential palace. And this guy, back to Fernando Saramedo, he was indicted in Brazil in the post-election, you know, when you mentioned Bolsonaro claimed like a January 6th thing in the United States that, oh, it was the election was fake and it was stolen, etc. Well, Saramedo was key in publicizing this disinformation and was actually indicted for fraud and false claims because of it. I don't see if he was, I guess he wasn't arrested. He must have lit out of there. But I wonder, Alan, if the loss of Saramedo is a loss for the Bolsonaro plan to Flavio Bolsonaro and his attempt for the October poll as well.
Yeah, we're going to see what sort of consequences this has. Of course, this is, not a political charge that Saramedo is faced with. It is a real incredible, if you might say, non-political charge. But I think it goes to show just what sort of pieces of work these sort of guys are who are at the head of these right-wing disinformation networks, which are spreading all sorts of, hatred across the continent. That this is the sort of person who, because his mistress steps out of line, he's going to order a hit on her in public. That's the sort of thing he's willing to do with people close to him. I mean, what is he willing to do to his political enemies? That really begs the question, huh?
Well, you didn't mention that his mistress is a lawyer that's worked with him in political campaigns. She was working for him at the time on a political espionage, if you like, mission that he set her up for. But she's pregnant. She's pregnant, presumably with his child out. It would complicate his marriage, I suppose. And it is political. She says that she had been sent to dig up dirt on Evo Morales at the time. This is why she was standing around outside this hotel waiting for an informant to bring dirt at his request on Morales, dirt that they've had a hard time finding.
Yeah, and Bolivia is an interesting case because, of course, Rodrigo Paz is the president, but he is only really president because the Bolivian left has torn itself apart in the last few years after the coup from Jeanine Áñez, which saw Evo Morales deposed and her becoming the short-lived dictator of Bolivia. We saw her turfed out after enormous nationwide protests. But then we saw the left between Lucho Arce and the more radical part of the left over Evo Morales really go to war with each other. And yes, as I said, tear itself apart. The movement towards socialism party has split in two. And because of that, we saw Rodrigo Paz managing to win because of vote splitting. And of course, the right-wing resurgence in Bolivia has been enormous. Morales himself is wanted on, I would say, quite spurious charges. But such is the state of Bolivia that the police, the military, don't even dare go into the heartlands where Morales lives because his support is so overwhelming that they know that people and militias will fight back against him. So Morales is actually safe in his own way. So there's no monopoly on violence in Bolivia right now. And that makes it a very fluid situation, one that we really have to keep watching in the years to come.
And the Bolivian lawyer and mistress Nadia Beller is her name. And there, yeah, as you mentioned, there's CCTV footage of her standing around waiting for somebody, and these two guys dressed up like DoorDash motorcycle couriers come, and one of them shoots. At least one of them shoots, from what I can see in the video, like from 6 feet away or something like that. The fact that she survived is a miracle in itself. But of course, the example of Nicolas Maduro is there for every leader in South America. I mentioned earlier, Alan, that you've written a book on Venezuela, on the situation politically and in the media. Bad News from Venezuela: 20 Years of Fake News and Misreporting. What's your opinion? What's your view of the Nicolas Maduro situation, and have you, what are your friends in and contacts in Venezuela, if you're still talking to them, telling you about the current situation there?
Well, Nicolas Maduro has, well, in January he was abducted, kidnapped from his home in Caracas and flown over to the United States. He has been held in solitary confinement, which in New York, which is considered a form of torture. And all through the World Cup, even the World Cup final was going on just a few kilometers from where he was being kept, and very few people in the world were even talking about this, the kidnapping of the leader of a sovereign a nation. Since then, the United States has managed to extract an awful lot of concessions from Venezuela. There's a bit of a split in how to actually manage this. Some people in Venezuela think, well, the game is up. We have to try to at least survive this. And right now, we are really behind the eight ball. We have to pretty much do as the United States says and try to just survive this period. Others however, are thinking that this is really an affront to dignity and that we cannot, kiss Trump's ass and, cozy up even to Israelis and allow them into our country as well. This is a disgrace and a betrayal of the revolution. So there's really two schools of thought in Venezuela right now. But of course, this is all happening because of American imperialism and the might of Washington, able to crush and extract concessions from countries that don't follow its orders. So yeah, Venezuela is in a really bad situation right now, one of the most perilous perhaps I've seen at any point since the Bolivarian Revolution started in the 1990s. So yeah, we're all watching Venezuela and hoping and praying that the situation can get better.
Well, and there was a vivid example of America, the United States' willingness to use its military and to bomb civilian targets and to kill civilians on the ground in pursuit of its aims. And in this case, they applaud themselves for their surgical precision and only killing, I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 and some odd people on the ground, civilians and military.
Just the United States for patting itself on the back for just killing 100 kids or 100 civilians. That's very on brand for the Trump administration.
Yeah, well, and of course, we in Canada here, I wouldn't compare our situation to Venezuela directly, but when you were speaking of people and the loss of dignity suffered under capitulation, it sounds very much like the debate going on in this country. Can we wait out Trump's two final years, or who knows, perhaps a heart attack or bowel infection or something before that? Or do we resist full throttle the so-called trade war that we're in right now in this country? I wonder, though, if the Americans will try a fifth military invasion of Canada. That's always a possibility, I suppose.
People talk about the United States being a dying empire, but if it is a dying empire, that's the most dangerous time because, they say a cornered bear is the most dangerous, right? Or a cornered tiger is the most dangerous and the most likely to lash out. And the United States has been lashing out in a great way, trying to impose its will militarily on so many countries. It's already bombed 8 countries in the last 12 months alone. That's Ecuador, Venezuela, Somalia, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Nigeria. And of course, as you said, it's threatening Canada, threatening to take Greenland, Mexico, Cuba. The list is almost endless. You almost think maybe it's better just to sort of placate him and wait till his blood sugar levels go down. go back to a sort of normal level and he'll forget about you and move on to the next subject
quick, get that man a hamburger. But he's also not only, it's not just his enemies, right? I mean, there's been bombings in Ecuador where, against so-called gangsters or gangs and that, the bombs, bombing the boats in the Caribbean, the bombing in Venezuela, of course. I mean, it's bombs away here. It's a wonder that they can still supply Israel at the rate they're going right now.
That's right. And they actually are having a real problem resupplying Ukraine, Israel, etc. Trump put in an order for, I can't remember how many Patriot missiles it was, but it's nowhere near enough because they are, going through those sorts of things in an extraordinary fashion. And then they're, pulling them out of countries like South Korea, these loyal allies or, client states, if you will, that have supported the United States for so long. So honestly, this is a very mercurial empire right now. And I think people in the global south all over the world are watching this and thinking, can this really last? Is this the sort of death throes of it? Or are we going into a brave new world where something else is going to happen? But, people are watching us and all around the world, the United States, its credibility and its popularity is dropping like a stone. And other countries, especially China, are the ones that are probably going to be the beneficiaries of this because, compared to the United States, Beijing looks extremely stable, extremely strong, and a reliable partner. And I think that's really the big story of the 21st century politically is going to be the battle between the United States and China for supremacy. It's not one that I think China is actively seeking, but it's certainly one that they're getting because of the Trump administration's obsession with stopping the rise.
Well, and everybody might remember Kissinger's words, to paraphrase, the only thing more dangerous than being an enemy of America is being its ally. Alan, it's been great to speak with you again. Let's not wait 2 years before we speak again. Alan McLeod's work can be found at mintpressnews.com. We've been speaking about his recent article, U.S. Meddling in Brazilian Elections, Preparing for Possible Military Intervention. I say recent because there's more since, and Alan's a very prolific writer. Thanks a lot for coming on and speaking with us again today, Alan.
No problem. My pleasure.
I'm going to take a brief break. I'll be joined after the break by Salam Hamdan. We're going to talk about what's going on in her native West Bank in Palestine. Thanks again, Alan.
Cheers.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere, everywhere, all the time.